said that there was 100 years between 1492 and approximately 1590 when Salonika was the center of all of the learning in the world at that time. So we mentioned some of the Gedolim. I'd like to mention some of the others. We mentioned that the Kiddur writes that he heard from older the Kubolim. There were three Rabbonim who lived at the same time with the same name, Yosef, Omos Rav Yosef Karam, Omos Rav Yosef Taita Zak, and the third one was Rav Yosef Ibn Leib. Rav Yosef Ibn Leib is quoted by the Shach all of the time, the Yerudei and the Chashamishba, his Shulis, he's known as the Maharival, my name Maharav, Yosef Ibn Leib. Years ago, people used to read his Shulis a lot, people used to read his Kiddushim. Those who study Gemara will remember that the Maharsha often quotes the Maharival that he makes Pilpulin. Today, hardly anybody looks in the Maharsha, so hardly anybody looks in the Maharival. But there's a famous story about the Maharival. There is a little sefer that was written in the late 1800s by one of the Talmid Chachamim in Europe. Not such an outstanding Talmid Chacham that I ever heard of him. Between the Sichtas and Gemara, but we don't have any Pirush Rashi. On Mazir, we have no Rashi. On the Ila, the Rashi is not by Rashi, and the Tesis is not by Tesis. They're different in terms. And on Tamura, also, the Rashi is very irregular. So there was a Talmid Chacham in Europe in the late 1800s who wrote a Pirush Rashi, imitating Pirush Rashi on these three Sichtas. And it was published, and the title of the sefer is Lekhet HaKotzer. How come I have the sefer? I don't know. It's an unusual sefer. He has the Gemara, the Omid Gemara on the top of the page, and he has his invitation, Pirush Rashi, on the bottom of the page. So, there's a famous story in connection with the story is more famous than the sefer. There's another rav in Europe, also not such a big prominent person, we never heard of him, who had a recurrent dream that the Maharival came to him in a dream, and he encouraged him that he should encourage this other rabbi who lived in a different city. He should please correspond to the other rabbi and ask him. He knows that his wife is deathly sick. The one who wrote this sefer with the Pirush imitation Pirush Rashi, his wife is deathly sick. He should learn my tshuvas till he knows them by heart, and his wife will have a refuah shleima. Should live on for many years, and he should publish his sefer on the three Masechtas. So this Talmid Chacham had this recurrent dream. So he sends a letter all about the problem that he had to the other rabbi in the other city. He didn't remember whether it was two Masechtas or three Masechtas. So he writes in the letter, I think it's Ne'ila, Nazir, maybe Tmura, Matra, whatever sefer you wrote, he encourages you in the dream. You should publish the sefer that you wrote, and you should learn my Shadus HaChuvus. So the other Rav published the sefer, and he learned the Chuvas Maharival for 4 years till he knew them all by heart, and his life lived on for many, many years. What did it have to do with, why did it have, what was the connection between the Maharival and this other Rav that he should learn the Chuvas? And the Maharival was a dayan in Salonika, and he used to judge being a Turk. So whoever lost, lost. Sorry. He wouldn't just have Rahmanas on someone. If you're not entitled to the money, so you're paskin, you got to give away the money. So on one occasion, he paskin against the balabas, who was a wise guy, who was a chassid. So as they walked out of the bezin office, out of the dintera, he slapped the balabas, slapped the Maharival in the face. And this was in the middle of the street, the marketplace, where all the Jews were there. Nobody said anything. They saw the way he slaps the rabbi because he paskin against him. So the rabbi, the Maharival, ripped Kriya on his beggar. He looked up to heaven and he said, Shalom Shamayim, look what's happening over here. Such chutzpah that he slaps me because I paskin against him. So this rabbi who wrote this sefer, the Lekhet HaKotzer, whose wife was deathly sick, he was a descendant of that Shegis, of that Kotzer. So that's why the dream, that's why, what did it have to do? This rabbi had the dream that they don't explain more. So this one rabbi had the dream that he should notify the other one, who is a descendant of this Rabbara, the Shegins, that he should learn his Jewess, and his wife will have the refuah. So the Maharival was one of the prominent Rabbanim who lived in Thessalonica, same time as Rabbi Yosef Karo. It was very common then, didn't have any Shulchan Aruch yet, so it was very common then to study the tour from Pesach Halacha. So the Beis Yosef is a commentary written on the tour by Rabbi Yosef Karo. So the Marival, when he gave shiur to his Talmidim, he always discouraged them from looking in the Beis Yosef. Don't look in the Beis Yosef, figure out on your own what the Makar is. The tour always quotes Gemaris and Tosfos and Rambam and Rambam, he quotes Rishonim. So he told us Talmidim that looking in the Beis Yosef is cheating. You should find all the Makaris on your own. And on one occasion, Marival was giving a shiur. He couldn't figure out what the tour was based on, what the source was. So he asked the Talmidim, does anybody have any good ideas? So someone sheepishly raised his hand and he said, I looked in the Beis Yosef, he gave us instructions not to. I looked in the Beis Yosef, and Beis Yosef quotes this and this source. So he said, good, you should look in the Beis Yosef. He backed out from his position. And you should never look in the Beis Yosef. He said, it's a good sefer, he gives them a curse, but I don't know. I remember Absalvechik told over that story. We were learning Shulchan Aruch and Yeshiva, so he told over this story. But he mixed up the names. The story was about the Marival. He said it over about someone who lived 100 years later. But in the history books, they have it about the Marival. Rabbi Yosef Karo also was born in Spain, and his parents ran away because of the persecution, because of the expulsion. And he learned for a while in Salonika, then he went there in Israel. It took him over 20 years to write the Beis Yosef, the commentary on the tour. In the middle of his writing the Beis Yosef, he moved back to Salonika for quite a while because he knew that they had more Svarim here than he had in Tzfat. They had a better library here. So he came back over here to Greece because he needed more Kisvei Yad and more Svarim. Very interesting. The Beis Yosef, he mentioned the Beis Yosef had a Magid. The Magid, and we mentioned the story with the Magid. Once on Leil Shavuos, Shloima Alkabetz was the author of the Chodaydi. In the history books, they think that he was the one who introduced the practice to recite Kabbalah Shabbos. And we have, we say, Morin, after Mincha, before Myron, to accept Shabbos a little earlier. So they think he's the one who introduced it. So on one occasion, on Leil Shavuos, Shlomo Alkabetz writes this in one of his writings. They think he was the one who introduced Rabbi Yosef Karo into the study of Kabbalah. And then, once on Leil Shavuos, they were learning together. In the middle of the night, Rabbi Yosef stopped talking, and a voice started coming out from his throat, and it kept up. That was the Magid who was talking through his throat. It was a different tone of voice. It wasn't his voice. So Rabbi Yosef Karo wrote a whole sefer, which was published. It's called Magid Mishor. It's on the Parshas of Chumash. And he writes all of the Kabbalah concepts that he heard from the Magid, speaking through his throat. But the Magid spoke to him in Halacha also, not just in Kabbalah. And he would agree, sometimes he would agree with Rabbi Yosef Karo's Pshat in the Rambam, the Pshat that he wrote in the Kesher Mishnah, that he wrote in the Beis Yosef. And on some occasions he would say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu enjoys your Pilpulim, the Pshat in the Rambam, but you should know it's not correct, and the Emes of Pshat is this. So he writes all of this in the Sefer Magid Mishor. Rabbi Yosef Karo, surprisingly, corresponded not only with other Svadish Gedol, he corresponded with the Ramah also. The Ramah lived in Krakow. They were contemporaries. There was a famous Din Torah. This Shaila comes up, Halacha L'maaseh in our generation also. And it's not so simple what the Pesach Halacha is. So people think, well, Ashkenazim should follow the Ramah, and the Svarim should follow Rabbi Yosef Karo. I don't think that's the way it seems to be. The Maaseh Shehoya Kachoya, the person pledged, he took a neder to give a certain amount of tzedakah and then he passed away before he had an opportunity to fulfill his pledge. So the Shaila is, Mason Chavshi, once a person dies, he can't fulfill any mitzvahs. So the children are going to give the tzedakah. It's not going to be parechim for the nifter as if he gave the tzedakah. Mm-hmm. So the Shaila is, we have a klal in Hekdesh, it's a Mishnah Kiddushin, Amirosov of Avoa. If a person pledges to give money to Beis Hamikdash, Kavod means Hekdesh, so that's Kimsi Rosov Hedibam, that constitutes a kinyan. So let's say a person says, I want to give the table to Hekdesh, and he dies. The table belongs to Hekdesh. The minute that he said, the animal, the house, the field belongs to Hekdesh, and everybody belongs to Hekdesh. So there was a big dispute between Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Ramoa by correspondence, whether that din of Amiroso Lagavoya applies to Tzedakah or not. Just a few years ago, there's a prominent doctor who comes to the Yeshiva almost every day to learn. Said his father-in-law passed away in South America, and he had pledged to give $50,000 to the local yeshiva on Yom Kippur, and he died in between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. I think he never had a chance to pay up the money. So he had a son and a daughter. So the son wasn't interested in giving money to the yeshiva, so it's not yet the Shana Mitzvahs. But the son thought that he should divide the Yerusha. He didn't know that according to the Chumash, the son gets the whole Yerusha. The father didn't leave any tzavuah to how to divide the money. So the son followed the secular law that the sons and the daughters divide equally, so he gave half the Yerusha to the sister. So the Shaila was, so all of the assets of the father were nishtatu, the yeshiva lechasim, and the daughter who took half of the Yerusha should either give half of the amount to the tzedakah, the full amount to the tzedakah, or do you say no? She's not mechayev to give anything. There's no amirasa legavaya by tzedakah, it's only by hekdesh. And she's not mechayev to give anything. So this was a big machlokes between Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Ramah. The Ramah is the one who said at that time that amirasa legavaya does not apply to tzedakah. But if you look in the Paskin, you look in the Chasam Sefer, and Moses Chubas, they seem all to assume like Beis Yosef. Even though they're Ashkenazim, they're not Svart. So somehow or another, Rav Moshe Weiss was asked the Shaila. So he wrote the Tshuva to me. I didn't really ask the Shaila. He wrote the Tshuva to me and he said, so he decided that when the Iker Adin, he said, we're Ashkenazim and we follow the Ramah. That doesn't seem to be the way it's assumed in the commentaries on the Shulchan. They all assume that we all follow the Messiah. Prominent Rabbanim, he mentioned there was one of the Rishonim was Rabbi Yosef Chaviva, who bought with the commentary on the Rif, it's called Nemuki Yosef, and many of his descendants were prominent Talmidei Chachamim, and they were known, the family was known as Ibn Chaviv, and they write in their Sforim that they are descendants of Rabbi Yosef Chaviva, the Nemuki Yosef. So we spoke a little bit about the Sefer Get Koshuv. It's a commentary on Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Gittin by Moshe Ibn Chaviva. But other relatives in the family also lived in Salonika. The Get Pasha lived in Salonika, but the others also did. So Rav Yankiv Ibn Chaviv ran away from the persecutions in Spain, Portugal. Both he was in Spain, then he ran to Portugal, then the persecution, he ran away to Salonika. So he was the one who had this idea to put together all of the Agadah, all the Agadahs in the Gemara. Not everybody has the patience and the interest in studying all the Gemara straight. There are difficult Gemaras, and it's much easier just to read the Agadah. So he took out all of the Agadah from the Gemara and from the Yerushalmi as well, and he published it. His name was Yaakov Ibn Chaviv. So he called the name of the Sefer El Yaakov. They don't explain why the Pope was upset about this name. I never looked in the sources. I'm sure there's a lot of literature. Somehow, for some reason or another, the Pope was very upset. Why he called the Sefer Ein Yaakov? So the next publication, he had to change the title, and it was changed to Ein Yisrael. And we were in one of the shuls. I found a copy of the Ein Yaakov that was called Ein Yisrael. That was printed 150 years ago or something in Livorno, late 1800s. It's still called Ein Yisrael. But yes, it's always called Ein Yaakov. In communities all over the world, there was a common practice that in between Mincha and Ma'ariv every day, the rabbi would learn with the Baal HaBat, and Yaakov, other communities, they would learn Kiddush of Shulchan Aruch, but many communities, they would learn on Yaakov, in between Mincha and Ma'ariv. And Rabbi Yaakov Ibn Chaviv, the one who put together the Agaritas, wrote a commentary, there are four volumes to the name Yaakov, so he, during his lifetime, he only published the first one or two, I'm not sure. And the third and the fourth volumes were published by his son, who was Rav Levi Ibn Chaviv, who also lived in Saloniki until after the father passed away. Then he moved to Eretz Yisrael, And he was the one who had the machlokes with the Maribe Rab about the smicha, and he lived in Yerushalayim. So the Rav Yankov Ibn Chaviv, who published this, and Yankov, the collection of Agaritas, wrote a commentary that's printed on the bottom of the page that's called Hakosev. So the editor's comments. In his commentary, Hakosev, he often quotes, sometimes he writes original interpretations. He didn't appreciate philosophy, so he wrote commentaries, he wrote Pirushim that are non-philosophic at all. But very often he'll quote Kisvei Yad Rishonim that were not available to other people. People only knew. Now, all of these Rishonim are available to everybody. Now they're all published, but 60 years ago, before everything was published, a lot of people only knew these Rishonim from HaKosev, by the Anyankin. Just to mention one of them, the Gemara says that originally all of the Sifrei Torah were written in an old Aleph Beis, in an old alphabet. And when Ezra came back from Golus Babel after the 7 years of Golus Babel, then they changed the script of the Sefer Torah to the way we use today, the Ksav Ashuris, the Aleph Beis that we have. Before, the older script, the totally different Aleph Beis. So this is a Kasher. The Gemara says that Mem is Samach Shebeluchas, and Esayu Om. The Beluchas were engraved through and through, it says in Chumash. Mizem is a Heng Tzuvim. They were engraved all the way through. So if you have a Samach, it's a complete circle. So the whole piece of stone should have fallen out. Or if you have a mem so fit, you know, Sarah Sadim is a few mem so fit, so also it's a complete circle, so the whole mem should have fallen out. The Gemara says that was a miracle, that the mem, the stomach of the luchas, that the stone didn't fall out. So the Mepharshim on the Gemara bothered with the kasha, but the old alphabet is totally different. So the mem, the stomach, there are the other letters that have complete circles in them. So why does the Gemara talk only about Mem Nesamach if it was the old alphabet? So the truth of the matter is, the Yerushalmi says that Mem Nesamach Shebeluchas, and that's how your Omdim is in disagreement with this statement that Ezra is the one who changed the Ksav, the, what we call Ksav Ashuris, and Mem Nesamach Shebeluchas, and that's how your Omdim is of the opinion that this was always. They obviously use Ksav Ashuris from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what the commentaries point out. It says in the Talmud Yerushalmi. But this Rabbi Yankov Ibn Chaviv, in his commentary on his Ein Yankov and HaKosev, quotes from the Ritva that even though we assume the alphabet was totally different in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu until the days of Ezra, but the Sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote that they put in the Oroin and the Aseret Sadim, that was always the Ksav Ashuris. The Rav Soloveitchik in his public shiur used to quote this Ritva. At that time he quoted it. The Ritva wasn't available on the Gemara. He didn't have any Ritva. He didn't know it from the Ritva. He would always quote HaKosev, the commentary on Yan Yankov, quotes this Ritva. And Yachrayim on the Daf pointed out this Ritva is contradicted by the Rishali. These Gaonim all spent an awful lot of time in Saloniki. We started to mention, I didn't finish the story, that on Shavuos night, when Shlomo Alkabetz was learning with Rabbi Yosef Karo, but that's when Rabbi Yosef Karo stopped speaking with his own voice, and all of a sudden the Maggid started speaking through his voice. So in the history books, they think that these two, Rabbi Yosef Karo with Rabbi Shlomo Alkabetz, were the ones who introduced the minig. It's pretty widespread today in yeshivas and a lot of shuls, that the people stay up all night long to learn on Shavuos. Others say that it's for a different reason, that the Medrash says when the Ribbono Shel Olam was preparing to give the Torah, he told the people he's going to give the Torah on Shavuos in the morning, so all the Jews overslept. Like Tochen, everybody overslept. That's a bullshit. They should have woken up early. They should come to be on time for the bus. What are they going to come late to a Maimon Hasina, Taseres Hadibras? So the Medrash says that they overslept. As a kapara, we want to stay up all night to show that if we would have been there, we would not have overslept. We would have stayed up all night, that it wasn't right that our ancestors, our forefathers, slept at night and they woke up late on Shavuos. Some of us would say, though, that the Ran in the end of Maseches Pesachim quotes a Medrash that when they saw, were so excited after Yitzias Mitzrayim to hear that in another 7 weeks they're going to be, there's going to be Kabbalah on Torah Har Sinai. So every day they started counting how many days have gone by since Pesach in order to know how many days are left till Shavuos. And the Rebbeinu Shel Olam appreciated our excitement. I remember in Yeshiva years ago, one of the Talmidim was engaged to get married, so he was counting how many days are going to yet left that he's going to get married. So the Rebbeinu Shel Olam appreciated the Nesu's excitement. They were so excited, they were counting Sfiras Aimer. So he said, that's a beautiful practice. He's going to institute it. We should all count Sfiras. That's how they write in the end of the year. So what do you mean that they overslept the morning of Shavuos? They were so excited from the beginning, they were counting from the beginning of the 7 weeks. So some Hasidic Sfarim, they say, that they thought that Kabbalah Sattar is going to be a form of Nebuah. And all of the Nevi'im, except for Moshe Rabbeinu, always had the Nebuah B'chalom. Moshe Rabbeinu was the only one who had Kedab Rishon V'Yayu. For Hawkins, not B'chalom. So they all Dafke slept. They slept on Shavuos morning to expect to have the Kabbalah Sattar B'chalom. Then the Rebbeinu Shalom caused them all to wake up. He said, no, on the occasion of Mount HaSinai, everyone is going to have Nebuah on the Dargah of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's all going to be B'hafiz below B'chalom. But that's usually assumed to be the reason in Shulbanach. They gave that reason. Why did we stay up all night Shavuah? Sort of as a kapora for the fact that our ancestors, on the occasion of Maimon HaSinai, overslept in the morning. But here, in the history books, they don't say like that. They say that we stay up on Shavuos night because look what happened when Shlomo HaKavetz was learning the Harusim with Rabbi Yosef Karo. He had a maggid start talking through his throat. So it's kedai we should all stay up on Shavuos night to sit in our Navy. We'll also be zeichet to some giluyim, some heavenly giluyim. These were some of the gedolim who lived in Saloniki during that period of 100 years.
One of our group, Mrs. Chani Tao, mentioned that she has yahrzeit today for her father, and if we say some Dibrei Torah, we should dedicate it Zecha Nishmas Aviha, Rabbi Victor, then Rabbi Moshe Ziskin Zuchar Levracha. The Gemara in Bava Kamma comments on a pasuk that when one of the kings died, the pasuk says in Malacha B'Kovet Gadol Asalo B'Moso, they showed great honor to the Melech Yisroel who passed away. So the Gemara says, what it refers to is, the Pasuk is referring to the fact that Hoshiva Yeshiva Al Kibroim, that the way to be Mechabed, a person, is to dedicate learning, Zecha Nishmas, that person. So this morning, when we were learning the Daf Yomi, we came across a very fascinating Gemara, which is worth elaborating upon. I'll start with the Pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim. The Torah tells us that one who murders B'nezid deserves a death penalty. One who kills B'shogeg has to run away to one of the six Ari Miklot. And the Pasuk says in Parshas Mishpatim, if he killed B'shogeg, Bohelakim Ino Yodo, it was Min HaShamayim, that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam caused this to happen, then it says, V'samti Lacham Bakam HaShayon HaShamam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will designate the location, the six Ari Miklot, Lossi Lava, they're going to be nine Ari Miklot. That's the only mitzvah that still has to be changed. Lossi Lava, when our cell will be expanded, so instead of only six Ari Miklot, there'll be nine Ari Miklot. So on that pasuk, Rashi in his commentary on Chumash writes, V'Helekim Inu Liyadoi, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu caused Min HaShamayim that this person should kill B'shege. Why did the Rebbeinu Shel Olam pick on me that I should kill somebody B'shege? Was B'nich Shuldik. Rashi quotes a Medrash commenting on the Pasuk in Sefer Shmuel. The Pasuk says, Kashiyayma HaMoshal HaKadmoini Me'rishayim Yetzei Resha, as the ancient proverb says, that all terrible things emanate from bad people. Me'rishayim Yetzei Resha. What does that mean? So Rashi quotes a Moshal, Rashi quotes a Medrash. It's in the Gemara, in Marcus. One person killed the Mezid, and he never was given the death penalty because they never caught up with him, because there were no witnesses, or the witnesses didn't give any hasroa, for whatever reason. There are a lot of murderers who killed the Mezid, and the Bezin doesn't have the opportunity to give them the death penalty that they deserve. Another person killed B'shogeg, but also there were no witnesses to bring him to Bezin, to force him to go to the Arbiklot. So they both got away with murder. The one who killed the Mezid was never punished. The one who killed Beshegi never went to the Arbiklot. So I mean, Hashemayim, they will cause that the one who killed Beshegeg will be climbing down a ladder. He will fall down on top of another person and kill him accidentally. The one on the bottom who got killed is the one who murdered the Mezid, who deserved the death penalty, and the Bezin never had a chance to punish him. So min Hashemayim, well, Elokim Inu Liyoda, he should die because he deserved the death penalty. And the one who fell down and killed Beshegeg previously had killed Beshegeg, but there were no Edim, so he never went to Ori Miklot. And the second time around, he'll kill Beshegeg. It's min Hashemayim that they caused him to be the Shliach Lerua to kill the one who killed Bemezid. And that's what Elokim Inu Liyoda. That's what Rashi quotes. The Rashi quotes from the Medrash commenting on this pasuk in Sefer Shmuel. What is the Mashal HaKadmoni? So the Medrash says that's a reference to the Chumash, the Chumash of the Torah. The Torah is the ancient proverb. What does it mean, Mashal HaKadmoni? The Ribbono Shel Olam is the ancient one with the capital A. And the Chumash is a Mashal authored by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Chafetz Chaim, in addition to the major Svarim that he wrote, on Shmiras HaLoshen, HaLoshen Hara, and Mechilas, and so on, Sefer Chavetz Chaim, Sefer Shmiras HaLoshen, and several others, also wrote smaller Svarim, on Hashkafe, on Emuna, beautiful Svarim. So one of the smaller Svarim that's named Shem Olam, he has the following comment. He says, the Mashal HaKadmoni doesn't only mean that the Torah is a Mashal authored by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but he says it's a Mashal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We really can't understand Elokus. The Kuzari is a Sefer Emuna, Sefer Hashkafa by Rav Yehuda Halevi, who lived before the days of the Rambam. Yehuda Halevi was the Talmud of the Rif. So Rav Yehuda Halevi writes an expression, and other philosophers from that period write the same. We can't really understand the essence of Elokus. Ilu yedaitiv hayisiv. If I would understand Elokus, I would be the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. The only one who understands what Elokus is all about is God himself. So the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to try to give us a glimpse into what his essence is. So he gives us derech mashal. To have a mashal to understand Elokus, we also wouldn't understand. So the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us a mashal of a mashal of a mashal of a mashal. So what is that mashal? That's a description of Elokus. So that's the Chumash, the Torah. The Torah is a description of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Putting together all of the mitzvahs, essay, all the mitzvahs, essay, so all the 613 mitzvahs, put everything together, this is really a full description of Elokus. This is probably what the pasuk means in Parshas Vahaloischa, when the Chumash distinguishes between the Koyach HaNevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu and that of the other prophets. So the pasuk says Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rambam writes that this is one of the 13 principles of faith, one of the Yud Gimel Ikori HaEmunah. The Rambam lists off, we believe in Nevuah, as opposed to the philosophers who think that it's impossible. We believe it can be, there was communication between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and man, there is Nevuah. We believe, number two, that Nevuah is Moshe Rabbeinu is on a higher level of that of the other prophets. What is the significance of saying a higher level? So because the Christians claim, yeah, Moshe Rabbeinu was a prophet, but also Ish came, and he was a greater prophet, and he changed everything. Muhammad came, and he changed everything. So we believe that Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest prophet, as it says in the Chumash, and that no other prophet can reverse anything that Moshe Rabbeinu said. So the Rambam lists of this principle that we believe Moshe Rabbeinu is Adon HaNevi'im. It gives you the differences between the voice Moshe Rabbeinu and that of the other prophets. But the Chumash describes the difference in a very strange fashion. The Chumash, it says, that unlike the other prophets, Moshe Rabbeinu was so great, Usmunas Hashem Yabid. He was able to see the image of God. What do you mean, Usmunas Hashem Yabid? God doesn't have any image. When the Ribbono Shel Olam spoke to us and he proclaimed us Eretz HaDibros, we didn't see any Tmuna. God doesn't have any body. How can the Chumash say Tmunas Hashem Yavid? The Pasuk seems to be referring to this basic principle. Other Nevi'im, and Nevuah by definition means Harashah. The Baal Shem tells a Navi, I want you to smoke a cigar today. I want you to invest all of your money in AT&T. I want you to eat a tuna fish sandwich for lunch. Whatever the Baal Shem tells him. I want you to marry this woman. I want you to name your baby Hefzibah. Whatever. A person gets a Nevuah, it's a Harashah only for that moment. Moshe Rabbeinu was also given many Hayruashah. But Moshe Rabbeinu was the only prophet who was given mitzvahs that are binding throughout all of future generations. He was the only one who was given mitzvahs l'doros. And those mitzvahs are immutable. That's one of the principles of faith of the Rambam. Shezos HaTorah, those say Mukhlefes, that the laws of the Torah are not subject to change. Based on Pesukim and Chumash, that the laws of the Torah are binding forever and ever. Why such an obstinate insistence that the laws of the Torah can never be changed? Every legal system, you change the laws. Every couple of years, you have a constitutional convention, and you change the laws. When you founded the United States, the situation was one way, and they had certain laws on the books, and then after 50 years, the world keeps on changing, so you modify the laws a little bit. All right, so we understand that a human being cannot modify the laws of the Torah. But why can't the Rebbeinu Shalom send another Navi, another prophet, and say, the Rebbeinu Shalom says that in this generation you modify the laws and you observe them a little differently? Nope. We believe that if a Navi comes and he tells us that the Rebbeinu Shalom said we should modify the laws, we know for sure the Navi is a Navi HaSheker. The laws of the Torah will never be modified. Why? So the answer is, this is what both the first Lubavitcher Rebbe writes in the Tanya, as well as Rab Chaim Balozhiner, the outstanding Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, writes in his Sefer Nefesh HaChaim. They both write the same thing. The reason why the laws of the Torah are immutable is because the Torah is a description of Elokus. It's a Mashal HaKadmoni. You can't really understand Elokus, and the Rav Shlomo wanted us to understand Derech Mashal. We wouldn't be able to understand the Mashal either. So he gave us a Mashal of a Mashal of a Mashal of a Mashal. That's what it means in the Pasuk in Iyov. When the Gemara comments on the Pasuk, the Medrash comments on the Pasuk, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was prepared to give the Torah to Bnei Yisrael, Azro'o v'yisapra hachina hachakora v'gamda rosha. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam prepared himself once and twice and three times and four times, and then he gave the Torah to Bnei Yisrael. What was it to prepare so much in advance? The Medrash tells a story that once Rabbi Akiva was in shul between Mincha and Ma'ariv, and the Baal Batim wanted to have a shiur, so he asked Rabbi Akiva, give us a shiur, a 20-minute shiur between Mincha and Ma'ariv. So he said, no, I didn't prepare. You're not allowed to give a shiur unless you prepare four times. Just like the Rebbeinu Shel Olam himself, when he was about to give the Torah to Bnei Yisrael, he prepared it once and twice and a third time and a fourth time, and then he gave it over. Shulchan Aruch, they quote this, that the Balkoire should review the parasha four times before he lanes. Before the Balkoire lanes, he should prepare it four times. What's this idea that Rebbeinu Shel Olam had to prepare himself before he gave the Torah Har Sinai? So that's where Rav Chaim Volozhiner says, to explain what Elokus is, he knew Bnei Yisrael, human beings will never be able to understand. So he prepared a mashal of his essence, then a mashal of a mashal, then a mashal of a mashal of a mashal of a mashal, and that is the Torah. If you take all of the mitzvahs of Torah and you put them all together, this is a full description of Elokus. All the mitzvahs in the Torah have to be observed. You have to wear tefillin, you have to keep Shabbos, you have to keep Taras HaMishpacha, etc. They're not just a mashal. All the mitzvahs have to be observed, but in addition, the being a mitzvah, all of the mitzvahs add up to the sum total of a description of Elokus. That's how the Baal HaTanya explains. How can it be that according to different opinions in the Tanoim, some of the mitzvahs never were able to be fulfilled and never will ever be fulfilled? One Tana is of the opinion that when Sora Mor is such a complicated, so many complicated details, the Hoya Velo Asid Lios, there never was a Ben Sora Mor, there never will be a Ben Sora Mor. because the conditions of observing on the mitzvah are so difficult, it can never happen. One Tana thinks that a bais hamenugah tzaras batim never was and never will be. So why did the Torah write Irani Dachas? One Tana says Irani Dachas. So why was it written? So the Tanaim answered Rosh v'Kabel Schar. What kind of an answer is that? It doesn't make sense to write a law book and to incorporate laws that never were and never will be. Human beings wouldn't write such a collection of laws. The Baruch Shalom gave the Torah to Bnei Yisrael. If the Torah is merely a collection of laws, why did he put in laws that never were, never will able to be fulfilled, and never will in the future be fulfilled? So that's what the Baal HaTanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, explains. That the laws of the Torah are laws, but another aspect of the 613 mitzvahs is, when you take the picture of all of the mitzvahs together, this gives you a full description of Elokus. So that's what the Chumash says, that Moshe Rabbeinu was greater than the other prophets. The Chumash in Parshas Bahaloischa emphasized Moshe Rabbeinu's greatness was that whereas the other prophets only received a prophecy that was Hayruah Shoah, no other prophet ever received a nevuah that's binding L'dairus. The Rambam emphasizes that today we still observe the mitzvah of Bris Milah, not because it was given to Avraham Avinu. No, Avraham Avinu was a prophet other than Moshe Rabbeinu. We still observe Gid HaNoshe today, not because it was given to Yankov Avinu. No, because it was given to Moshe Rabbeinu and Har Sinai. The Rambam interprets that this is Pshat in the Mishnah in Maseches Chulin, comparing Gid HaNoshe, that Gid HaNoshe is binding today. You have to remove the Gid HaNoshe from the leg of the animal. Not, it was given to Yaakov Avinu, but today it's binding not because it was given to Yaakov Avinu, it would have only been a Hayruah Shoah. We still observe the mitzvahs of Gid HaNoshe, the mitzvahs of Bris Milah, because they were repeated, they were given to Moshe Rabbeinu. He's the only prophet who was given Dinim L'Dairus. So the Chumash expresses this by using the terminology, Musmunas Hashem Yabid. Moshe Rabbeinu was the only prophet saw the image of God. God doesn't have any image. He doesn't have a body. No, what it means is, Kol HaTarakula, the 613 mitzvahs together, give you a full description of Elokus by means of a mashal of a mashal of a mashal of a mashal. So the only one that was given dinim l'dairus, dinim that abided throughout all the future generations, was Moshe Rabbeinu. The other prophets were not. So this morning we studied the Gemara. Very, very strange Gemara, famous story. The Roman government sent two representatives to the rabbis, and they insisted they must teach them Kol HaTarakula. Limdunu Taraschem, teach us your Torah. This is a Gemara in Bava Kamma, Daf Lamed Tes. So the Gemara says that they studied, they reviewed everything a second time and a third time, and they were about to leave to go back to Rome. They covered everything. What do you mean they covered everything? We send our children to yeshivas, kindergarten through college through till they get married, they still don't know Kol HaTarakula. How can it be that the Roman government sent representatives in a short period of time, they learned Kol HaTarakula? The Gemara is not to be understood. And then as they were about to leave, so they told the Chachamim, we appreciate all of the Torah that you taught us. Your Torah is an Emes Dika Torah, but we're not happy about this one din in the Mishnah in Bava Kamma. That's how the Gemara says. Shoshal Yisrael, Shonogach Shoshal Nochri is Potter. And as opposed to the reverse case, Shoshal Nochri, Shonogach Shoshal Yisrael is Chayv Nezek Sholem even the first time. So the Roman representatives asked the rabbis, this din doesn't make sense. Iman Avshach. The Pasuk says, Ki Yigach Sharish Ashor Reyehu. So if the word Reyehu is meant the Dafke, Reyehu v'loy Nachri, then in both directions it should be Potter. And if Reyehu is not to be Meduyak, it wasn't intended to be Dafke, then in both directions should be Chayv. How do you come off to distinguish between one direction and the other? Shor shal Yisrael, Shonogach Shor shal Nachri, as opposed to Shor shal Nachri, Shonogach Shor shal Yisrael. So the Gemara ends, and then the Gemara says, but they promised that they're not going to tell the Roman government about this din, which seems to discriminate against the Nachri. The Talmud Yerushalmi continues to relate that the Ribbono Shel Olam didn't trust the Roman representatives, and he caused that on their trip back to Rome by boat on the Mediterranean, they forgot this din and the other din that they were not happy about. they gave a report to the Roman government that the Jewish religion is beautiful and no discriminatory laws. So the Maharshal has a sefer on Bava Kama that's known as Yamshal Shlomo. His name was Reb Shlomo Luria. He lived in the 1500s, but he lived in Poland. He didn't live in Greece. So the Maharshal has a comment on that Gemara. How can it be that they learned Kol HaTorah Kula? It doesn't make any sense. So he thinks that, how can it be they finished everything in such a short period of time? So he thinks that the pshat simply must be that they must have come with a list of pointed questions. Do you charge interest when you lend to a Nochri? Do you charge interest when you lend to a Yisrael? They asked all of the laws that could possibly be discriminatory to distinguish between a Nochri and Israel. And the Tanoim told them all the Dinim that we do discriminate. So he says, if that's the Pshat, and he thinks that's obvious the Pshat, that they came with pointed questions specifically. Not that they just sat down to learn every Masif, that they came with specific questions. So the Tanoim should have realized that it'll be a Sakana, they'll make a pogrom, they'll kill everybody. So why didn't they lie? There was no art scroll, there was no Gemara even written in Hebrew, the Mishnahs were not written down yet. This was still in the period that the Torah Shebal Peh was being transmitted in Baal Peh. So why did they tell the truth? They should have said, we paskin the same. Everybody's equal in the eyes of the Lord. Mishpatecha yolahem. We never distinguish between the Yisrael and the Nochri. So the Mashal has a startling comment on that Gemara, which is quoted in Yeridaya in the Siman Kuf Nun Zayin, the Siman, when the chapter in Shulchan Aruch talks about Yehori Val Yavar. So they quote this, the commentaries quote the Maharshal. Maharshal says that since the Torah is a description of Elokus, if somebody asks the rabbi what's the din in a certain case, and he falsifies on purpose, if the rabbi makes a mistake, so b'shogeg, he made a mistake in Psak Halacha. But if the rabbi knows what the din is, and he falsifies on purpose, and he misrepresents the Torah, that means he's describing a different God. He's describing a different religion. So then that's Avodah Zarah. We say, what does the religion that you subscribe to? And I say, Shoshal Yisol Shonagach Shoshal Nochri is Chayiv. If it's against the din and I falsify on purpose, then it means I'm describing a different God, because the whole Torah is a description of Elokus. So the Mashal says that to falsify a halacha on purpose is covered with the din, governed with the rule of Yehorek Valyavar, just like Avodah Zarah. Is Yehorek Valyavar this too? It's quite a fantastic finish, but the commentary is quoted. Rav Soloveitchik used to say this over all the time. The Gemara talks about Talmidei Chachamim who are arrogant, that it's a terrible thing. So he would say, how can a Talmid Chacham be arrogant? The more Torah a person knows, the more intimate he is with the Ribbono Shel Olam, the closer he is to God. When one becomes closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam, all of the arrogance should fall apart, should fall away. In the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, we are nothing, we are nobody. So the more learning a person has, the more humble a person should become. How can it be that a Talmid Chacham is as a Baal Gaiva? It must be that he doesn't believe in this principle, that one who learns Torah becomes closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Must be that he doesn't believe that Torah is a description of Elokus. But this is the insistence, this is what both the Baal HaTanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, and Rav Chaim Volozhin both write to say, the reason why the Rambam wrote this principle, the laws of the Torah will never be changed, is because the Torah is a description of Elokus, and the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu never changes. The Navi says, Ani Hashem lo shanisi, Atem ben Yaakov lo chilisa. Everything in the Bria keeps on changing. The fruits keep on changing, the vegetables, the eggs, the size of the eggs, human beings, the body keeps on changing. Everything in the Bria, the grass, everything keeps on changing. That's the nature of the Bria. But the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is l'mayla ben ha-teva. He never changes. So because the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu never changes, that's what we assume. So thus HaTorah lo osim machlefes, because the Torah is a description of Elokus. Okay, I'll recite Tfilas HaDerech. If people want to be yotzu with my Tfila, say Amen. If you want to say your own, say along softly. Yehi ratzon lefanecha, Adonai Eloheinu v'lehei avoseinu, shetorecheinu l'shalom, v'satzideinu l'shalom, v'sagricheinu l'shalom, v'sagiyeinu l'mechos, chatzeinu l'chaim, v'simcha u'l'shalom, v'satzileinu mikav kol oyev, v'yored, v'nistim, v'chayisroes, v'aderech, the chomini for raniyos hamisrakshus of vaos laolo. Sichlach bracha b'chamaisa yodenu. Sitneini lechenu lechesed ulerachamim. Beinecha v'yenei chol rawai. Sich makol tachnu neinu. Ke'el shamea tfilo v'sachanu n'oto. Ruchato adunoi shamea tfilo.
Amen.
The Gemara at the end of Tzubis has a whole agarata about when Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi passed away. It's known as Ashkafta de Rebbe. Rebbe was Rebbe Yehuda HaNasi. Ashkafta means when he passed away. By Lubavitch, they have a sefer Ashkafta de Rebbe. It's a description of when the fifth Lubavitch Rebbe passed away in Europe. It's all sefer describing what he did the last few days of his life. But Ashkafta de Rebbe, the title of the sefer, is this passage in the end of Ksuvus. Says that the funeral took Rebbe's body from city to city. They didn't bury him on the same day. There's a mitzvah to bury the person on the same day because of the Zoyin Hameis. But if you're going to postpone the funeral, l'chvod Hameis, l'chvodo, elineu l'chvodo, that's permissible. So usually people need a day or two to notify friends, relatives to come attend the funeral. So Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi died, they postponed it for quite a while. They took his body from city to city, and they gathered together big groups of people to listen to Hespedim. And Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi left instructions they should only say Hespedim in the big cities, not in little villages, because it's not covered for the chief rabbi to have 25 people attend that funeral. You have to have big masses. So he said, Altis beduni bayaris, don't say Hespedim in little villages. Should only give Hespedim in the big city, said he did. When he finally buried him, he was buried on a Friday, late in the afternoon, and it was dark, and they thought the sun had set, and some of the people thought that they were Machal Shabbos. They felt terrible. They thought that they were Machal Shabbos. So, after the Kvura was all over and the people came back to the city, usually there are people on the outskirts of the city, you don't want to have too much space in the middle of the city. After they finished, so it was a very cloudy day. The clouds dispersed and the sun was visible, so all of the people realized that no one was Machal Shabbos. So one of the great Gaonim who lived in Salonika in that period of 100 years when they had that, Salonika was the center of learning in the whole wide world, that more learners, more Talmid Chachamim, more yeshivas there than anywhere else. One of them was the author of the Sefer Lechem Mishnah, the commentary on the Rambam. So they write that when he was sick, so they added another name. We usually assume that his name is Avraham Tikutan. When he took sick, so they added another name. We usually add the name Chaim or something like that. They added another name, Chia Avraham. And the Sefer, when they print the Rambam, they don't write this additional name. So he passed away, and the Kvura took place late in the afternoon on Friday. And it was cloudy, and a lot of the people thought that Cholila, maybe they're Machal Shabbos. So they write the history books also. Such a similar thing happened. After everybody came back to the city, the clouds dispersed and the sun was noticed, and they all realized that nobody was Machal Shabbos. So it's parallel to the story about Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, that the same thing occurred. I mentioned yesterday that one of the great Gaonim who lived in Salonika ran away from Spain. Was Rabbi Yankiv Ibn Chaviv, one who put together the Ein Yaakov. So he's known for his agarata for the Ein Yaakov, but during his lifetime, he was known as a Paisik, as a Dayan, he was a big Talmud Chacham, not just an Isha Agoda of Rush. So where he came from in Spain, they had a practice that when they would find a sircha on the lungs of the animal, so a sircha usually indicates that there's a hole in the lung, fluid came out from inside of the lung to outside and congealed, and it developed to form a sircha. If that's the case, which it usually is, that the sircha constitutes the fluid that solidified that came through the walls of the lung from the inside to the outside, then you have a neck of an area. You have a hole in the lung. A neck of an area is a trefa. So in Spain, they used to have a heter that is practiced in many places, that they would peel off the sircha, take the lung and put it in a bucket of water, and they would blow down the windpipe to see if bubbles come up from the location where they removed the sircha. So if no bubbles come up after removing the sircha, means that there never was a hole over there. So then it's kosher. This is a kula that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Yosef Karo only permits it if the sircha comes off very easily, if you can peel it off easily. And there are more for Ashkenazim is makel, even if you have to rub and rub it up for a long time till you peel off the sircha, still you take the lungs and you put them submerged under water, you blow through the windpipe, and if bubbles don't come up, that's an indication there never was a nekev in the lungs and the animal is kosher. And the Sfardim don't rely on that kula if you have to rub and rub for a long time, so that's why Sfardish meat has to be glatt kosher. Glatt means smooth. The lung has to be smooth on the outside. If you remove the sircha, so even Rabbi Yosef Kara writes for the Sfardim, the sircha is easily removable, so then it's not an indication that there was an ekev, a hole in the lung. But if you had to rub and rub till you get off the sircha, so that's not acceptable. We are concerned that that's a trait. So the Rabbi Yaakov Ibn Habib, the author of the Ein Yankov, when he came to Salonika, they never had that practice over here of relying on the skula to rub off a sircha and to submerge the lung underwater and to blow, and if the bubbles don't come, then you assume there was no hope. So even though that was his tradition when he came from in Spain, he didn't feel that it was proper to introduce such a kula in Salonika because they never had that kula. In this community, they were machmer for the glatt kosher, so he left it like that. We mentioned yesterday about the son of Rabbi Yaakov Ibn Habib. After his father passed away in Salonika, then he moved to Eretz Yisrael. First, he spent time in Tzfat. That's where most of the Jewish Yishuv was, in Tzfat, because the water was healthier there. The water in Yerushalayim was polluted, and then he didn't get along with Rabbi Yaakov Beirav, Marie Beirav, say he went to Yerushalayim. So Rabbi Ibn Habib, while he was alive, he was considered the big Pesach in Eretz Yisrael. After he passed away, so then the Rabbanim and Tzfat were greater than those who remained in Yerushalayim. But during his lifetime, he was considered greater than the others. So he is known today. He has a whole collection of Shabbos and Shuvahs, several volumes, but he's the Shadas and Shuvahs were published sloppily. It wasn't printed by him. It was published after he passed away. They have a lot of Shuvahs are repeated, and Shuvahs are not in correct order. And they're missing a lot of Shuvahs. And now somebody in Eretz Yisrael, some Professor Avlin, who does a lot of work in learning and history, is going to reprint all of the Shuvahs of Rav Levi Ibn Habib in a sensible fashion. So historically, for many years, that Rav Levi Ibn Habib was known for three things. Number one was the Kutras Asmicha. He gives all of his reasons why he doesn't agree with Marie Beirav regarding his notion that he should confer Smicha. So at the time, Marie Beirav was given Smicha by all the Rabbanim. Then he gave Smicha to Rabbi Yosef Karo, then he gave to Rabbi Chaim Vital, Rabbi Moshe Alshech. Around 7 or 8 or 9 people got Smicha, and then the whole plan fizzled out, so nothing ever came out of that. But it's because Rabbi Levi Ibn Habib was opposed to the whole idea. So he killed the whole thing. So he's known for his Kutras Asmicha. Number two, he is known. Purim never falls out on Shabbos, but Shushan Purim does sometimes fall out on Shabbos. So in Yerushalayim, they observe Purim on Shushan Purim. So how exactly do you observe it? So it's known as the Purim Mishulosh. You observe parts of Purim on three different days. You're not allowed to read the Megillah on Shabbos because we're concerned someone may forget by mistake carry the Megillah in the street, and you're not allowed to carry on Shabbos. So the Megillah is read on Friday. Machlokes, Hatanan, whether it makes sense to read the Megillah on Friday or Thursday, so we paskan on Friday. Al Anisim is recited in the davening on Shabbos, and Yilein Bayova Amolek on Shabbos because Shabbos is Purim, and Sudas Purim cannot be observed on Shabbos. So they eat as soon as Purim HaMatzoi Shabbos. So this whole concept, everybody knows when your children spend a year in Eretz Yisrael, and Shushan Purim falls out on Shabbos, so that's an experience to observe Purim Mishulosh, spread out over three different days. This was instituted by Rabbi Levi Ibn Habib. He's the one who put together all of these things. Basically, he was the big Pesach at the beginning of, that's when the Jews started to move back to Yerushalayim. was in the 1500s. Ablev Ibn Khabib was the one, because most of the Rabbanim lived in Tzfat at that time. So the new yeshiva in Yerushalayim was started by Ablev Ibn Khabib. He was the big paisei. So he was the one who established Shulchan Aruch. They called him on Purim. This is the way one observes Purim on Chaliyas B'Shabbos, Purim B'Shulash. He's also known, that was the time that more Jews started to move back there. So some of them were actually farmers. Most of them are not farmers. Most of them are composing Luchadaydi and instituting Kabbalah Minhagim of Kabbalah Shabbos and learning all night Shabbos long, all kinds of writing Svarim, Shulchan Aruch, Beis Yosef, doing all kinds of other things. But some of them were actually farmers. So the issue was, which year is actually Shnas HaShmita? So the Gemara tells us when the second temple was destroyed, it was Matzoi Shmita. It was year number one. The previous year was Shmita, and that year when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed was Matzoi Shvi, is the year after Shmita. So this is the Gemara, the first paragraph in Maseches Avodah Zarah and Aftes. So Tosfos on the Gemara writes, they're not sure which year the second temple was destroyed. And they're not sure also what the Gemara means, that it was Matzoi Shvi. It means that that Tisha B'Av, that summer, July, August, that was the year after Shmita. That was already the 11th month after Shmita had ended already. Or maybe the Gemara means to say that the Roman soldiers put the Beis HaMikdash on fire and it was burning for weeks and weeks and weeks till after Sukkot, when the fire from Tisha B'Av till after Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur Sukkot, when the fires went out the next year after Rosh Hashanah is ready the next year. So the next year was Matzoi Shmita. But the year, that summer, that July, August, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, when they first put the torches in the Beis HaMikdash, maybe that year was really Shmita, not Matzoi Shmita. And then we mentioned the other day that the Rambam is of the opinion that we should, every 50th year, we should add a blank year. We say 7777, every 7th year is Shmita. But you don't count 7-7 Le'olam Void, you count 7-7 till 49. Then the 50th year is a Yovel year. Even though the Gemara explains that we today don't observe Yovel, but you still count the Yovel year, the Jubilee year, as a blank year to push off the next Shemitah. So that was the Rambam's opinion. But the Rambam himself says you shouldn't follow what I said, you should follow the Gaonim, because they actually lived in Eretz Yisrael. They observed Shemitah. The Gaonim Eretz, they were Gaonim in Babel, they were Gaonim in Eretz Yisrael. The name of the yeshiva was Gaon Yankov. And the head of the yeshiva, the fundraiser for the yeshiva, was known as Rosh Yeshiva's Gaon Yaakov. Many of them were big Talmidei Chachamim, Rav Hai Goyen, Rav Shneur Goyen, and some Rav Sadi Goyen, and some of them were just fundraisers, like the Yeshiva University today. The head of the Yeshiva University is a balabas. He doesn't claim to be a learned individual. And we used to have presidents of the Yeshiva University who were big Talmidei Chachamim. We have all kinds. So they were the Gaonim in Eretz. So Goyen today means a very big Talmid Chacham. In the days of the Gaonim, it didn't mean that he's a Goyen of Talmid Chacham. The name of the yeshiva was Gaon Yankov, the pride of the Jewish people. The yeshivas were always considered the pride of the Jewish people. So the head of the yeshiva, the fundraiser, was known as Rosh Yeshiva's Gaon Yankov. So in the days of the Gaonim, they already established this policy. You only count 7-7, the Olam Void, you don't count the blank year. So the Rambam thinks that it doesn't make any sense. He thinks that you should count the blank year every 50th year, but he gives in to the practice of them. He says they lived in Eretz Yisrael, they observed Shemitah, and this is the way they observed it. So we have to give in. We mentioned that the Ravid disagrees with the Rambam. He says, wrong, you should follow the Rambam's opinion. We mentioned that Rav Soloveitchik said, to the best of his memory, the only case where the Rambam and the Ravid argue had a paskin. The Ravid says you should paskin like the Rambam, and the Rambam paskin is against the Rambam. So there were four different dates in the days of Rav Levi Ibn Khabib. There were four different possibilities when to observe Shemitah. So he was the one who established what we observe today. We follow the Shita Sagonim and all the calendars when they write the Tavshin Ayin Hey, last year was Shnas HaShemitah. So they say Kifi Minik HaGaonim. This was basically established. This psak was established by Rav Levi Ibn Khabib. So these are the three things that he's basically known for. For the Kutchus HaSmicha, he was opposed to the reinstitution of the Smicha. Now we're going to straighten out when Eliyahu Novi comes, it's going to be an issue, okay? And He's known for the Purim B'Shulosh. Shulchan Aruch is the one who established how one observes Purim when Shushan Purim falls out on Shabbos. He's also known for the establishment of the Shnas HaShmita. You mentioned Rabbi Yosef Kara wrote the Shulchan Aruch. He himself writes, he never really intended that the Shulchan Aruch should be a Sefer Pesach. He should pass on Halacha L'Maaseh. He intended the Shulchan Aruch was like a table of contents for the Beis Yosef. So people should look at the table of contents and then look at the Beis Yosef to see what opinions he quoted. Somehow it didn't turn out like that. Everyone took it that the Shulchan Aruch was intended as a Sefer Pesach. As a Sefer Pesach, it's missing a lot. It's only a table of contents. So that's why they had to write the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. That's why you have the Shach and all the other commentaries. The Shach lived only the late 1600s. He lived less than 100 years after all of these Gaonim, Ari Ben Leib and Ari Taitatzak and all of these Gaonim. Rabbi Shlomo HaKohen, who was Mar Shach and all of them. The Shach had access to all of these Svarim. Very surprising. Shach died at the age of 40. And he was aware of all of these Svarim and he quotes them on every page. Mar Ival, Mar Shach, Mar Chash, all of these Gaonim from Salonika. Different parts of the Shulchan Aruch are based on different Svarim and Rishonim. One third of the Shulchan Aruch is word for word quoted from the Rambam. There are other sections that are based on other Rishonim. For example, the first Chelek Yeridei, and there are three volumes in Yeridei. So the first section of Yeridei that has all the laws of Kashrus, Lachashchita and Treifus and Bas Mechola and Malicha and Tarubis, all the laws of Kashrus. So that's basically based on the Rashba Sefer Torah Sabayis. Hilchas Avelus is basically based on the Ramban and Torah Sa'adam. Ramban wrote a whole Sefer Torah Sa'adam and Hilchas Avelus. Then big chunks of Chash and Mishpat are based on a Sefer of Trumos written by a Talmud of the Ramban. Not to be confused with the Sefer HaTrumah, which is like a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch that was written by one of the Balei HaTosis, by Rabbi Baruch. Tosis quotes the Sefer HaTrumah. But the Sefer HaTrumos has all of these complicated dinim of Chash and Mishpat. Big chunks of Chash and Mishpat are patterned after, based on the Sefer HaTrumos. Yosef Kara writes, how did he decide how to paskan halacha l'maaseh? There's so many different opinions. So he said he's going to count the majority of the opinions. How can he count the majority? There's so many Rishonim we're not even aware of. So he said he's going to pick three Rishonim, the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh, and he's always going to follow two out of the three. That's a little bit cheating if you decide the Rambam, the Ruba follows the Rif. Rambam rarely disagrees with the Rif. The Rambam's father, Rabbeinu Maimon, was a student of the Rif Migash, Rabbi Yosef Ibn Migash, who himself was a student of the Rif. So the Rambam, as a young child, got a bracha from the Rif Migash. He never learned by him, but he got a bracha from him. So he attributed his success in learning to that blessing that he got from the Rif Migash, and he always considered himself a Talmud of the Rif Migash. And he said over, he didn't know firsthand, he said he heard from his father, the Rif Migash was Sichlo Mavis B'chol HaTalmud. He was a super genius, the Rif Migash. And the Rif Migash was a very young student of the Rif, so the Rif was even greater than the Rif Migash. So the Rambam usually follows the Rif. So if Rabbi Yosef Kara starts off with the policy, he's going to consider three shittas in Rishayim, the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh. So the Rif and the Rambam, Ruba the Ruba, say the same thing. So he's always going to follow the Pesachim of the Svarnish and Poskim. The Rosh represents hundreds of Balei HaTosfos. There's such a Tshuvas HaRosh. The Rosh and the Tshuva writes, the Ri and the Rabbi Natan, these are the two major Balei HaTosfos, were G'dolei M'chochma V'minyan, greater than the Rambam. So that's what the Rosh is saying. The Rosh was towards the end of the period of the Balei HaTosfos. The Rosh was a student of the Maram Rutenberg, who was the end of the period of the Balei HaTosfos. Maram Rutenberg was a student of the Ozerud. It was all traditions from the Balei HaTosfos. So the Rosh writes there were hundreds of Balei HaTosfos. So that's what he writes in a Tshuva. The Riyad Abin Atama greater B'chochma V'minyan than the Rambam. Means that the Balei HaTosfos outnumbered the Chachmei Svarot by the Rabbi. But Rabbi Yosef Kara starts off like that. going to consider only the three major poskim, the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh. It's going to follow, usually follows two out of three. Every so often he deviates from that policy also, but usually he follows that policy to follow two out of three.